I'm Mike Lupica, MSNBC, MLB.com, and my new novel, Robert B. Parker's Blood Feud.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press and author of the new book, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, ESPN, and the Bob Ryan Boston Podcast, and we welcome you to the Monday morning edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We have been together for almost three decades, first on television, and now in the, we are here for you every Monday and Friday morning, which is a wonderful juxtaposition. We get to review the weekend, and we get to look forward to the next weekend. And the big story in the world of sport over the weekend in terms of what's going to happen in the future was it that 13 wise men, no, it is all men, right? Just at this moment, is there, the 13 wise people.
Let's not gender assign here, Bob.
They convened and they came up and we saw the white smoke come out of the chimney. And yes, we have four teams that will play for the National Football Championship, Collegiate Football Championship. And of course, three of them were given. And the big issue was settled, gentlemen. Oklahoma, where the wind comes right behind the rain. Well, they're in. And out, and unhappily out, of course, are Ohio State and Georgia. What do you think?
I think Oklahoma, we've been kicking this around for about a week now. I think Oklahoma deserves to be the fourth team. And we were cheated out of our doom, Mitch, we were cheated out of our doomsday scenario.
Because it almost happened.
If Georgia wins that game, you know they weren't going to keep Alabama out, okay? And then you would have had to make a choice, in my mind, between a better Oklahoma team than Notre Dame, and I think Oklahoma would have gotten screwed.
I think even if Georgia had won, you'd probably end up with the same teams.
But would you? Do you think that? I don't think Georgia would have played themselves into the Final Four if they beat Alabama? I do.
It played themselves into the Final Four. They would have been ranked number two. But I'm saying I think you still would have ended up with the same four teams, right? I think Alabama would have been in there, Georgia, Notre Dame, and Clemson. It just would have been a different order. I think Alabama would have been fourth. But in the end, this wasn't much of a debate for me, because I said this on Friday. Oklahoma had the blessed opportunity for them to avenge the one loss on their record against the very same team that they lost to, and that's the one thing that Ohio State can't get past, or Georgia wouldn't have been able to get past with two losses. When you have one loss on your record, you start thinking about, well, who was the loss to? Well, Oklahoma got to face the very team that they lost to in that big shootout, and how did they beat them? With defense. I mean, I watched that whole game, and Oklahoma's defense and with a safety really was the determinant factor there. That game wasn't 60-59. You know, that was almost a football game in the 30s and 20s, and they didn't just squeak by Texas. They thoroughly beat them. You know, that was a challenge, but they beat them. And so I don't know how you argue with a team that effectively has one loss and avenged that one loss and won its conference championship versus Georgia doesn't win its conference championship, loses, has two losses, and
I wasn't saying that Georgia.
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm just talking to the critics of the world. No, I get it. You're on the same page. But I'm saying, you know, the people who think Georgia should have been in there, including the Georgia coach, you have two losses, and two is two. I'm sorry, two is two, and one's one, and the other loss is to LSU, and you didn't get a chance to avenge that loss. And then as far as Ohio State's concerned, unless Ohio State had beaten Northwestern 73-0, they were never in the conversation as far as I'm concerned, because you lost to Purdue and you got smoked by Purdue, and that keeps you out of the top four when given that three of the top four are undefeated.
You know, so much of this ultimately because is circumstantial for people about who you're playing and when you played them and all that. I mean, it's always the case. And you may get the here was Oklahoma with the opportunity, as you said, to avenge a loss. And they did just that. That's fine. You know, I want to throw this one out there. We have three undefeated teams, and one of them no one's questioning at all. None. Yeah, no one's questioning Alabama. All right, that's fine.
They were late Saturday afternoon.
Oh, I know. The fact that that was to a team that we know is a formidable team. But you're when halfway through that, you know, with that there was a moment long. It's going to happen, and we're going to have the chaos we wanted. What I'm going to get is this: Clemson. Who'd they beat? You know who their best win is? It's either, you got three choices, Texas A&M, BC, or Syracuse.
Yeah, but wait, Bobby. If you're saying this, then you're saying that ACC teams need not apply here.
Well, I'm just throwing it out there, Michael. I mean, here's what I'm trying to get at. The eternal question is, they say they want to get the best four teams. That is the stated reason, thing, right? Okay, they want to get the best four teams, and that comes down. Doesn't it ultimately come down to your version, whoever you are, of the eye test? The question should be, who do I think would win a game between Team X and Team Y on a neutral field? Isn't that the ultimate question needs to be answered?
Bob, you're penalizing the league more than the team here. All I'm saying is they're not going to keep a team that just won beat Alabama 2 years ago in the national championship, won all their games this year, has one of the quarterbacking stars of the sport right now. But if you're going to talk about the eye test, okay, the eye test says to me that both Georgia and Ohio State are better than Notre Dame.
Well,
I'm
going to get to that.
Do you think Ohio State would beat Notre Dame? Because I do.
Yeah, I do. I think, Bob, I get what you're saying.
That's where I'm heading, by the way.
This is the thing about being undefeated, and this is the thing about when they start these polls, you know, 6-7 weeks in, when you really haven't played those big November games yet. Clemson gets there on reputation. I mean, they're great. They're a great team. They're a great program, and they've gone toe to toe with the top schools in the country. So when they're undefeated, they're going to jump up higher than, well, for contrast, Central Florida. All right, undefeated is not equal. You know, all things being equal, undefeated is not undefeated. So Clemson has that reputation. You're in the 6th, 7th week of the season when they start this stuff, and they're already at the top because everybody considers them a top team from pre-rankings or whatever. And then as long as they continue to win, you can't make a case for them to fall. And that's, I think, what ended up with both Clemson and Notre Dame. They haven't had an important or close game in weeks. You know, we haven't talked about Clemson or Notre Dame except at the fact that, oh wow, they're taking on Syracuse, mighty Syracuse. We tried to build that into some kind of big battle, and it turned out to be nothing. So when Clemson and Notre Dame both continue to win, Clemson by ridiculous margins, Bob, remember, you know, they're
I know, I'm looking at them
53-4 and like that. Well, you just can't knock a team like Clemson from a major division, a major conference, down if they're undefeated, and that's what gets them in. Will they end up being like a secondary opponent to an Alabama or even an Oklahoma? I don't know, but you can't keep them out.
All right, let's talk about Alabama for 1 second, okay? Because Nick Saban, bless his heart, bless his warm, loves all people heart, turned out to be right to do everything in his power to keep Jalen Hurts at Alabama. Because when their season was on the line, and I don't think they were ever going to get knocked out of the Final Four, and Tua hurts his ankle, here comes Jalen Hurts to ride to the rescue, just the way Tua ran to the rescue in the championship game last year. And you know, we were talking about this before we started today. Jalen obviously doesn't have the same warm feelings for his coach that his coach now has for him, but the decision to make sure he did everything in his power to keep Jalen Hurts at Alabama worked.
I mean, that's on Jalen Hurts more than Nick Saban, and you know, Jalen Hurts decided, I can get better here. Maybe he thought at some point this is going to happen. If he went someplace else, he'd have to learn a whole new system. I was surprised when I learned that he was staying, because you look at, this is the year of the transfer. Look at how many quarterbacks, the minute they get slightly insulted, they go someplace else, and they find success. You know, from Michigan all the way across the border, they've got their transfer quarterbacks as starters. But Alabama is Alabama, and Nick Saban got what he wanted, Mike, in my opinion, because of everything that he's done there. He's created this ridiculously successful program that's hard to walk away from. It just is. You know, you're going to be in a potential national championship game every single year. You know, you're going to be high profile, and you're going to be seen on TV. And maybe in Hurts' mind, he says, well, you know, something could happen to Tua, and I'll get my moment. That's exactly what happened here. I do want to ask you guys, though, you know, we're talking about that storyline kind of took over that game. But before Jalen Hurts became the storyline of the game, wasn't the storyline of that game the fake punt that didn't work for Georgia at a critical moment? I could not understand that. Their defense was playing well. You're holding Alabama, who beats everybody by 50 points, to the 20s. You know, they had 14 points into the second half. Why all of a sudden are you faking a punt, looking desperate, and then they blow it, and Alabama starts its charge downfield? I mean, I thought Georgia lost this game as much as Alabama won.
And so you're saying you think his name should be Kirby Not So Smart. Is that what you're saying?
At that moment, yes. Kirby,
And here's the thing. It wasn't like it was fourth and two, by the way. I mean,
no,
they had
they had needed 11 yards to get the first down.
No. I'm telling you something. I do think that even really good coaches, and I think Kirby's a really good coach, I think a sense of panic sets in even when the game is going your way, that you're thinking, I must do everything in my power to ensure that we win this game, even if it's taking a reckless, and it was a reckless chance. It was a momentum changer. It changed the dynamic of the game. And yeah, Mitch, I agree with you. Ultimately, it cost him the game.
No question.
Yeah, there was a moment there. You can sort of see where the tide turned. I didn't even realize what I
really,
was saying.
Really,
Alabama was driving. I want to say that this was in the third quarter. Alabama was driving. It was 28-14, and they were driving down, and they got close. They got into Georgia territory, and Tua threw a pass close to the end zone, and it got picked off. Remember, it got picked off, and you know, and it's like, whoa, you know, Alabama. Now we're in the third quarter. It's 28-14, and they just got intercepted rather than going in and scoring when they were close. And then Georgia went three and out. They did nothing. They just ran three straight times and went three and out. With the way Jake Fromm was playing, they went three and out to play conservative. They end up punting, and then Georgia comes down with Tua, and they hit that big pass with Jalen Waddle. Remember, he just took off and left everybody behind. And suddenly it's 28-21, and then you feel them coming, and they're next series, Georgia's five plays and out. They punt it, and you know, a couple series later, you have the big touchdown that ties it, and then Hurts comes in, and then they're done. And I, you know, on such things, the games turn. You know, when you decide to play conservative a little bit to be safe down near your own end zone, do you decide to make a fake punt? And Alabama, you've just got to keep the pedal pushed down all the time. You know, even if you're winning by two touchdowns, you have to act like
you're behind
by two touchdowns.
But that's what he did, and it cost him the game. By the way, our producer, Lou Pellegrino, who's like half a genius, Bob, he points out that Hurts coming in for Tua is the equivalent of Drew Bledsoe coming in for Brady that time.
Oh, you think
Pittsburgh.
I haven't thought of it? Oh, God, yes. I've been thinking about that. It is classically analogous because they don't win that Pittsburgh Steelers game without Bledsoe in that year. And, yeah, absolutely, positively, it was very, very high. Hey, just a quick aside. Has anybody has either Dwayne Haskins or Kyler Murray done enough in the end to overtake you-know-who for the Heisman?
Man, that's a great question. I love Haskins. I don't know if it's enough late speed for him to pass him. Mitch and Bob, nobody's playing better than Haskins right now. And the kid from Oklahoma, oh my goodness, it's like watching it's Russell Wilson, but there's
right
a lot
down
of
to
Russell
the
Wilson in his game. What?
Right down to
right
the
down
baseball.
Right down to baseball. Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He's something else, and that's going to be an interesting and fun game. You're really talking about a movable object, the irresistible force. Oklahoma, Alabama, that's remarkable. Much more interesting to me than Notre Dame, Clemson.
I think it's great, Mitch. It's going to be a great game. I think. I hope.
Yeah, it feels more like a national championship game than whoever's going to win Notre Dame Clemson. And Bob, that speaks to your whole thing about where they end up ranked. I don't necessarily think that Notre Dame belongs in the position that it belongs. To me, if there's four teams and Notre Dame's one of them, they should be fourth.
I think they've gotten a
pass
out of this.
But they didn't do it.
I think they really got a free pass out of this. And I, you know, that's just all the, you know, all the shaking down the thunder thing, because it cannot be on performance alone this year. I'm sorry, the schedule did not. Most notable victory was the very first one they had, and after that, there is nothing really notable at all. 36-3 over Syracuse in Yankee Stadium is the next best thing they can claim, and they damn near lost to USC, who are very mediocre.
A lot of Vanderbilts and Ball States on that.
Yeah,
schedule.
Pitt 19-14 over Pitt. 50 Wake.
Okay, let me ask you guys this. Because after we've now got the tournament set, okay, and we know that it's been Alabama and everybody else all year till they got behind against Georgia. Did that game make you think that they are not just going to spike the ball all the way to another national championship?
Well, I certainly, you know, with Clemson, you have to figure would be a formidable obstacle for them if they were to play them. I think the word we're searching for here, Michael, is mortality. Was there an element of mortality we saw in that game?
Yeah.
And the answer was, 28-14. I mean, I'm
right.
Damn right.
Yeah.
And you know, in a good quarter. Look, listen, hats off to Jake Fromm for what I thought was the game of his career by far. I mean, this kid has come a long way from where he was last year. He made some NFL quality passes there. That when he dropped that one in the breadbasket in the side of the end zone, the touchdown. I'm telling you, there are only a handful of NFL quarterbacks that can make that pass. So, a great quarterback, obviously, and attacking as Danielson was saying on the TV endlessly. But he was right. You got to attack their corners. Attack their corners. You can't be afraid of them. You got to just say, "Well, we're going to have to beat them." Does Oklahoma offer that? Yeah, they got a great passing game. They got a great offensive attack. So maybe they give them that kind of game. But I'll also say this: that was the first time that Alabama really had a struggle in a game, had to come back. I mean, there were all kinds of statistics. How long it's been since they were that far down?
Little bit against Auburn. Little bit in the
but not down two touchdowns in the third quarter and throwing an interception.
Auburn was what, 3 points at the half or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah.
But
they
threw, like I pointed out a little earlier, they threw an interception in the third quarter, and it's 28-14. And Georgia has all the momentum. And if Georgia goes down somehow and scores there, and it's 35-14, they're not coming back from that. So they did. And that was really good for Alabama. I mean, they got to see under adversity. They lose their starting quarterback, and of course, you know, Hurts comes in and wins the game for them on some fantastic passes and scrambling and running around. So I think their confidence got a huge boost, and I you know, they're the prohibitive favorite.
Yeah.
And now, before we leave this sport, I just want to say the one thing I always say about college football. Now begins the weirdest time in any sport. Across the freaking board, you can't find any sport that comes to this big crescendo and says, okay, we'll see in a month. See in a month, and then we'll start revving this up all over again. And that's why, if you want to pick a sport that is the most unpredictable, it's college football's championships, because I don't know what happens over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know who gets better. I don't know who gets hurt. I don't know who actually studies for finals and who's really just practicing all time long. There's no such thing as momentum. There's no such thing as carryover. It's a totally different season. And, I have racked my brains for 30 years in the sports writing business to try to figure out, is there some better system? Because they ignore finals anyhow, you know, and that was always the argument. Well, we got a break because, you know, we got to allow the kids to do their final exams and all that. And that's archaic at this point.
I don't think there is. I don't think there is, because you'd have to, they don't want to play it in the run up to Christmas, okay? They don't want to play the regular season all the way to Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know a solution, but I love to ask my pals a question, okay? We've now seen what the vote is. We now see what the seedings are, okay? We know why Oklahoma was a better bet than Ohio State. We know all that stuff. I will ask you guys, before we move to the NFL, this final question. Do you believe Georgia is one of the best four college football teams in America?
Yes. And the team I'd kick out is Notre Dame.
Yep, I do too.
Well, good argument for going to eight, which will be some other time.
All right, full disclosure, Michael, we have to say America and the Ships at Sea and everybody, and Michael Lupica and Bob Ryan are both graduates of Boston College, so you're free to filter in any kind of biased thoughts that you may have. We're going to be upfront about this, but this has nothing to do with that, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, I just don't think this particular Notre Dame team is as good as its record.
Well, I am not a Boston College graduate. I couldn't get in, and so I had to go up the road.
Did you try? Did you really try as hard as you could have?
No, okay. I knew already I couldn't get in. You guys were there already. You were legends. You would establish yourself. There was no room for me. I didn't want the rejection letter saying thank you, but we already have Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan at our university. We're not interested in you. So I just went to Brandeis, where no other sports writers, I believe, have ever come out of. So I'm good.
The judges.
Meanwhile, let's jump over to the NFL.
Abby Hoffman went there, though, didn't he?
There's probably other sports writers. It just sounded like
something good. Yeah, Bud Collins coached him, Mike.
Okay, the NFL had a lot of interesting games, not the least of which was last night and the meltdown of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we'll get to that. Melting steel. You like that? Meltdown
steel. Ooh, yeah.
But there's
the
a
tide.
Larger...
You had the tide turning,
tide
too.
Tide turned.
On a, oh, you're
I'm
on a roll.
I'm just rolling. I'm gonna
Wordsmith.
End this podcast and go right into a new novel. But before we do that, there was a second issue of domestic violence. This one even bigger than the Washington Redskins picking up a guy who had his second or third offense the week before, because it involves a young, really talented player, Kareem Hunt. Video, once again, reminiscent of the Ray Rice situation. Startling, ugly, hard to watch video. Of, once again, you know, some kind of issue in a hotel. This one, a party in February, where you can clearly see him shoving a girl, pushing, getting in an altercation, pushing a guy into her to the point that she's disoriented, and then going over and kicking her. It did not take the Kansas City Chiefs long to dismiss him. And for that, you have to say we're in a new era. Because that, you know, 5-10 years ago, that would not have happened. And they dismissed the league's leading rusher last year, and a guy who's integral to their plans and their hopes for an amazing season, which they're in the middle of having. And he is now off the team, off the team. And the question, there are several questions here that I throw out to you. Number one, is he going to be back with a football team anytime soon? He's 23. All right, this isn't Ray Rice, whose career was already waning. Number two, how much heat does the NFL deserve for not investigating this, apparently not interviewing the woman? They claim they reached out, but they couldn't find it, blah, blah, blah. TMZ had the video instead of them. And what does this say overall about where we are in the domestic violence in the NFL situation today?
All right, well, let me start here, okay? There are obviously still way too many young men in this sport who are slow thinkers and slow learners, because if unless they've missed everything that has been happening in their sport and in their country over the last several years, it means that they're more in a bubble than we ever could have imagined. Start there. Two, yeah, I know that the NFL can't, you know, doesn't pay for information. But I keep thinking, well, if TMZ can get it, you can get it. And the whole, this idea that they're way more vigilant now in the post-Ray Rice world, I'm sorry. They knew something happened when it happened in February. And now everything happens when we see the video. Stop me if you've heard this one before. And I've got a parting shot on this subject, but we could talk about it now. It's a very tricky and complicated thing, even with hideous events like this, to decide, as you said, Mitch, who gets the death penalty and who doesn't get the death penalty.
And of course, the thing that always drives me crazy is the idea of not even trying to talk to the victim or
trying's not, they, you know what, you know. It's there's an old expression, no medals for trying, okay? Yeah. To have an informed opinion about this, they have to talk to the young woman. They just have to, and they have to do everything in their power. I mean, seriously, Mitch and Bob, we are living in a world where the investigative arm of the National Football League turns out to be TMZ.
TMZ, yeah. Yeah.
TMZ, where they get, I mean, there's footage that, when you said, Mike, slow thinking, you're absolutely right. Now, granted, when I was 23, I was the fastest thinker either. And guys who are football players have a sense of entitlement, particularly at parties and off season and all the rest of it. This wasn't during this season. It was February. And we've all witnessed this before. Dumb behavior by guys at late night parties, hotels, clubs, coming out of a club. How many times have we heard sentences about bad behavior with athletes that begin with coming out of a nightclub, entering a nightclub, leaving a nightclub, 2 a.m. in the morning, 4 a.m. in the morning? Having said all that, you have to be particularly thick in today's day and age to think that if you're in a hotel hallway, you're not being recorded. I mean, this is the way the world works now. And so there are these recordings everywhere. And the NFL shouldn't need TMZ. The minute they hear that this took place in a hotel, in a hallway, it's standard practice to just go to the hotel and get the footage. That's all there is.
Did you two see, I happen to see the interview. I was watching at the
time. With Kareem Hunt?
No, yesterday. The one with Lisa Salters.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt with Lisa Salters.
Okay, all right. Here's what jumped out at me about it. Now, he seemed very nice and docile and contrite to a degree. You know, I mean, contrite, but docile and calm and rational. But the thing that, here's the one. The word decision gets thrown. I hate the idea that this is called a bad decision. And that's A, it's not a decision. You know, B, it's a reaction. And B, that's not who I am, he said. No, I'm afraid that is who you are. You have to deal with that, okay? And I want to speak from personal experience. As you guys both know, I was suspended for a stupid thing I said on television 15 years ago. And that is who I am. I paid the price for being who I was, for being stupid and impetuous and not recognizing the danger zone that I had entered myself into.
But you did learn from.
That's my essential nature. Oh, yeah. But the point is, that exactly is, I couldn't, you know, so that is who I was. No, that's not who I really am. No, that, Bob, that's you. That's the worst part of you coming out at the wrong moment. That's what that was. Right. And I paid a price for it.
He'll now have the opportunity to decide if that's who he is or that's who he's going to be, because he's now going to pay a price. It's very easy when you haven't had to pay any price. You go right back on with your football, right, or your blessed life. Bob, you had to pay a price, and you'll never do that again. And I do think it's important, especially when people are 23, to have some kind of upside of forgiveness in the world. Now, this is not making any excuse.
He's
going
to play again, Mitch, don't you think?
He's going to have to go through some significant visible acts of contrition, including getting some help and rehab and maybe doing community service and going out and speaking. I mean, look, Ray Rice actually became a really good spokesperson for this. And in fact,
great,
it was interesting
great
to watch, yep, that they went to him over the weekend to ask for a reaction to the Hunt situation. He had a very tempered and intelligent response to him and everything. So some good came out of bad for Ray Rice, at least in terms of how he can help other people. Whether he should have been able to play again or not is a different question. When a guy's 23, Rice was in his 30s. When a guy's 23, he's going to play again unless he just acts the fool.
Can I cut off and ask? I want to. You continue your thought, okay? We cannot live in a world where ultimately the decision on whether these young men, no matter how boneheaded and violent they've been, get to play again, depending on how much football they have left in them. I'm sorry. So they're going to have to decide. One act was as hideous as another. They're all different. They're all different people. But are we saying that Hunt's going to get to play again because he's really good still in 23, and Ray Rice didn't get to play again because he was past his prime?
The answer is it's going to keep happening that way because the ultimate thing is talent wins out. It's why Reuben Foster was immediately picked up, because we all know he's really good, and why a backup defensive back who did the same thing would be out forever, and that would be the end of it. No, the talent thing is going to be hanging out
there. Bob,
Ray
Rice
was declared. Wait. Don't shift off of this. There's more to it than that, though, Bob. The reason that it's capricious is because there's no real hard, fast policy by the NFL.
Right.
If they had a hard, fast policy, we wouldn't be having this discussion. If it was a year, matter what, the minute you had a domestic violence incident.
Or 2 years.
Or two, whatever
right,
it was,
yep.
then we wouldn't
right.
be talking about it. He's out for a year. But instead, it's relative punishment because they don't have a freaking hard, right. fast policy. And that's the NFL's fault.
Okay, all right, can I just take 1 minute here? There's a fine piece by Brooke Pryor in the Kansas City Star, okay? And I'm going to try to get through this, but it speaks to a lot of what we're talking about, how we arrived here from last February. In the days after a February altercation in the hallway outside Kareem Hunt's Cleveland Hotel residence, the Chiefs, who were annoyed to learn about the incident through police and press reports, brought in their star running back to ask what happened. He was given the opportunity to tell his side of the story, to explain what occurred in the early morning hours of February 10th. Instead, a leaked source said, Hunt told the Chiefs that he didn't have anything to do with the altercation, that he stayed inside his room, blah, blah, blah. Let me just skip down, okay? Police reports from that night included an interview with the woman who said she was shoved and pushed by Hunt. In a 911 call, a woman said, I was assaulted and I need help. I think his first name is Kareem. There is no reference to a kick, no reference to me. Presumably, to verify Hunt's word in February, the Chiefs had initially pursued the video until they were told not to by the NFL, according to a source close to the team. That's the standard operating. See, they do have a policy for this, Mitch. That's the standard operating procedure of NFL investigations. Once a team reports an incident to the league takes over the investigation process. And guess what, guys? It ain't any better than it was with Ray Rice.
Yeah, boy.
Well, that's really disturbing what you just read there, Mike.
Yeah.
Because if what you're saying is accurate, or what she wrote, is that he or she? I didn't catch who it was who wrote the piece. But if what they wrote was accurate, then what you're saying is the NFL said, don't go after that video, we'll take care of it, and then apparently did absolutely nothing with video.
Never spoke to Hunt!
But with video that is clearly damning. And so not only is that immoral and ethical and stupid, I'll emphasize the stupid twice. Don't you think TMZ or one of these outlets is going to get a hold of it eventually? Did you learn nothing from the Ray Rice situation?
Maybe the slow thinkers are at the league office, Mitch.
Well, that's undeniable, Michael. That's undeniable.
Oh, my God.
And until I don't know how Goodell is going to put a spin on this one. But, you know, they seem to just their approaches ignore it. Ignore it and it'll burn itself off as a headline.
Mitch, you're right. I'm telling you, whether it's a year or 2 years, okay? And maybe if Ray Rice had been 2 years, it would have been way too late for him to play football. But until there's a policy, but they don't even have a policy to properly investigate this stuff.
Right.
That's what's mind-boggling to me.
It is mind-boggling. And all right, let's move on to the games were played, and let's work our way backwards because I don't know. Okay, I know we want to talk about the Pittsburgh game, but there's one other major headline here. Green Bay doesn't have a coach. Bay doesn't have a coach, Mike.
Well, they have a coach.
An interim coach. You have been saying this not only this year, but I've heard you say it on the Sports Reporters on TV. Mike McCarthy has been getting a free pass because of Aaron Rodgers' talent for a long time, and they should have been a whole lot better than they were. And after 13 years, which in the NFL is an absolute eternity, he's fired in the middle of a season when they can't beat Arizona Cardinals at home in a field that, you know, Lambeau used to be so intimidating, especially to a team that plays in the desert, and to play in December, and they lose on a field goal. I understand why they did it in the middle of the season, because they are officially now, in my mind, out of the playoffs. They don't have a chance. But this is a major development for a team that should have done a whole lot better and arguably the best quarterback in the NFL.
I think they've done it one other time in their history. Mitch, there's not a Packers fan. I know a lot of Packers fans, including one in my own family. There wasn't a single Packer fan I spoke to last night who wasn't happy that this had happened. And I'm not talking about none of us are happy to see people lose their jobs. And McCarthy will be coaching somewhere in the league next year, okay? The
I don't
idea.
Think so.
Tony Dungy said last night, you can't do this in season to a guy who's won a Super Bowl. With all due respect to Coach Dungy, who I do have a lot of respect for, Coach, a lot of guys have won Super Bowls, okay? He won his over a decade ago. And he has, to my mind, no matter how many 10-win seasons he has mismanaged the prime of one of the greatest players to ever play the position and had a hand in championship games that they lost, okay? And the one Super Bowl they won in Dallas, guess what? Number 12 saved him that day. He was an okay offensive coordinator. He fell into the prime of Aaron Rodgers. He did far less to prop up Rodgers than Rodgers did to prop up him. And guess what? There isn't a young coach in the business who doesn't think, holy crap, I got a chance to coach Rodgers. He's still only 35. This is one of the great jobs opening up, to my mind, since maybe Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson fell out of sorts with each other and Barry Switzer got to come in and coach the Cowboys to another Super Bowl.
And then they now have, you know, a chance to really survey the field ahead of everybody else that's coming.
I immediately thought of Josh McDaniel, Bob.
The thought just flashed across my head. It'd be interesting, that whole scenario about him, and whether and how people are going to view him after what he did last year. But but his stock as a coordinator is still extremely high. So yeah.
Well, Mitch, you've watched him for a long time. Did you ever think you were looking at the second coming of Lombardi in Green Bay?
No. He's never been a great, great coach. But he's assembled some really fine teams. And just like Brady in New England, you'll never know how much it's the team and how much it's the excellence of the quarterback. And when I say it's the excellence of the quarterback, I don't just mean his play. I mean the shadow that he throws over his team, the confidence that a team has when they have a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers behind there. There's just a belief that they're going to win. You know, but teams don't believe that when they have, Chase Daniel at quarterback. But they do believe it when Aaron Rodgers is there. And how much is that? Does that then make the receivers play better, the offensive linemen play better, and the coach gets credit for that? I have to actually tip my hat to Green Bay for doing what they did. And again, nobody dances on anybody's grave when they lose their job. It's not good. But basically what they were saying to their team is, we know this isn't working. We're not waiting until the end of the year to make you play out a string with a guy we know who isn't going to be here. We're going to send a message right now. We're going to start thinking about the future this week. Even though the playoffs may be out of our hand, we're starting to think about next year now. And we're going to make sure that we have we can reach anybody we want. We're not going to get boxed out of any coach that's going to be available, because we're already on the table for those coaches. So I have, not only do I not have a problem, I actually admire that they did this, because
Mark
it does
Murphy
throw you,
did it.
You,
yep.
It throws your Murphy team into some disarray, but I think it's the right thing to do.
You're sparing everybody week after week of awkward press conferences, awkward questions that everyone knows he was the DCW dead coach walking. And why, I think it's a very wise thing to do in this particular scenario.
Mitch, here's what you just touched on, and I think it's right. I actually think they might win out. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, okay? But they didn't want to have some kind of finishing kick and save this guy again, okay? I actually think they're going to beat the Bears when they play them. I think they're going to win all the rest of their games. I think everybody's going to take a deep sigh of relief, and you can see it in Rodgers' body language, how beaten down he was by the play calling, by the fact that they assembled receivers who obviously still don't get him, okay? I think he would rather have Jordy Nelson running a 6.4 40 on the team still than this is such a poorly constructed team. By the way, which is why Ted Thompson lost his job, but in the last year or so as general manager. No, they got to take a look at the whole operation, because guess what? We now know, watching Tom Brady, the other number 12, that 35 is not old at quarterback, and they cannot waste another day of what is left of Aaron Rodgers' prime.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that being said, let's finally get on to the actual football that was played yesterday. Because, man, there are a lot of stories off the field. But on the field, let's begin with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the San Diego Chargers. Now, this was a terrible – I mean, the numbers are startling. How many games, some of the 100-plus games when they had that big a lead.
174, I think it was.
Yeah, some ridiculous number when they were up 23-7. And end up losing the game, only score one more touchdown and end up losing the game by a field goal. And a field goal, by the way, that they got three cracks at and could have had another one.
Mitch, wasn't that crazy? Have you ever seen anything like that?
I've never seen anything like that.
And the guy runs past the ball on the last.
He was so offsides that he decided to just make. I don't know. He's trying to take something back. Like, okay, I realize I'm really offsides here, so I won't block it. But you know, having said that, if you watched Mike Tomlin afterwards biting his tongue about the referee, there were a lot of bad calls in that game. Not to make an excuse for Pittsburgh, there were a lot of really bad calls that led to points that went against Pittsburgh there. And they did lose to San Diego, L.A., yeah. A team that we have been talking about is really good and is now, by the way, got the same record as the Patriots, I believe, and is still a threat to have the best record in the AFC and have home field throughout the playoffs if they continue playing the way that they are. So it's no shame to lose to the Chargers, but when you have them down 23-7, that's pretty weird.
Hey, Mitch and Bob. Yes. We all know the incredible, staggering numbers that Patrick Mahomes has put into the books this year, okay? 40 touchdowns, okay. Is anybody playing the position right now, this minute, better than Phillip Rivers is for the Chargers? And we're going to play the schedule game again. They're one game behind the Chiefs. They lost a heartbreak game a few weeks ago to Denver, okay? Here's who they've got left. They've got the Bengals. They have at Chiefs on December 13th. They've got the Ravens at home, and we'll talk about them and my man Lamar Jackson in a minute. And they finish in Denver. Is it, to quote our late friend who we celebrated this weekend, William Goldman, is it inconceivable that they could win out?
Inconceivable? Oh, no. Except, you know, obviously at Kansas City, and that'll be interesting at the end. It's very fascinating.
They just won at Pittsburgh, Bobby.
I know. I'm glad you're playing the schedule games. I was prepared to do that, Michael, with regard to the Patriots and the Chiefs as well, and the how this is going to shape up. And like that, for example, if you're the Patriots, when the Chiefs play the Chargers, who do you root for? It's interesting.
Right.
No, really, because, you know, the Patriots would want. All they need to beat out the Chiefs is to tie because they've got the tiebreaker. I don't know where the tiebreaker would be between the Patriots and Chargers. I don't know that we'd have to but I do know exactly how it's going to shake down with the Chiefs. The Patriots, by the way, three tomato cans in the division. They are at Dolphins, they're at Steelers on the 16th, and then they go home with Buffalo and the Jets. That's how they end up. And the Chiefs.
And what do we got with the Chiefs? What do
you got? Ravens the Chiefs right there? At home. Thursday night game is the Chargers, a week from Thursday.
Oh.
Ah. At Seattle, which, whatever they're doing, we all know it's still a tough place to play.
Oh, yeah. They're a wild card right now.
And then, oh, thank you, Mr. Schedule Maker. There is a God. They end up at home with the Raiders.
Okay, but Bob. Those first three games you just listed, that's as tough a road as any of the guys we're talking about today.
Yeah.
That's the Chiefs, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you think so, Mitch?
Yeah, and that's minus Kareem Hunt. Yeah. You know, this is a whole different ballgame. This is going to be a great stretch. I mean, there are a lot of teams that are in play here, and if it's not in play, well, first of all, there's a lot of teams that are in play for best record and home field, but then there's a lot of teams that are in play for wild card. A lot of teams. You can't even it would make our listeners go crazy if you threw
your
them
hair
all
would
in
hurt.
There. But the fact that even teams like the Miami Dolphins and the Indianapolis Colts are alive for these chances here, and nobody knows who's going to win the NFC East. Even the fact that the Cowboys are playing better, they're one game ahead of the Redskins. So, and with if Mitchell Trubisky stays out, you see what the Chicago Bears, they lost to your New York Giants there yesterday, and all of a sudden Mitchell Trubisky is a big question mark. I thought he had a minor shoulder injury, and now he's missing games, and they could start coming back to the pack too. So there's a lot going on, Mitch.
It's going back to why you like the decision of the Pack. It's another thing that probably made Mark Murphy's head explode yesterday, because guess what? If they had just beaten the Cardinals in the snow at home, almost everybody that the Packers needed to lose yesterday lost. They would still be, even at 5-6-1, they would have been very much in play. Yes, the
wild card thing, for sure.
Congratulations, Mitch. Your NFC North was 0-4 yesterday.
Unbelievable.
Thank you. Well, we knew the Lions were going to
By the way,
keep
did you see
part.
Did you guys see the end of the Bears Giants game?
Oh yeah.
That game was fascinating. Some right. amazing stuff
Bobby,
in that. How about that? Yeah, well,
I hope you're talking about the onside kick. No, you talk about it because Odell Beckham looked like it was a grenade with the pin pulled with that ball in front of him. He said, nobody questions my effort. Nobody's questioning your effort.
It wasn't effort, it was brain power. Right? I couldn't believe that explanation. No, no one's questioning your effort. We think you're stupid. Not going for the ball. That's all. By the way, there was a play in the Bears-Giants game that it was one of the most extraordinary plays of its type that I've ever seen. And here's what it reminded me of. You know how we all know, we've seen them for 35 years, the Bud Light guys, the dunk guys, you know, the guys off the trampoline at the halftime of the college games, right? And they throw the ball off the backboard, and the guy does a double backflip, and he dunks and all that. Fine. Rob Ross says, boom, bah. Did you see that down punt in the Giants-Bears game?
The double down punt, because two guys had to do it. Not one, but
two separate guys went airborne in the end zone and flipped the ball back, and they finally, but then the coup de grace of the whole thing, Michael and Mitch, it was downed by the long snapper, Zach Diassi, on the one.
By the way, you've got
to YouTube this thing, people, everybody. You'll never have seen a play like this on that particular type
Mitchell,
of play.
Mitch, let me just tell you this, okay? I hope you saw Beckham's throw, because for all of the talk about the future Giant quarterback, I think it might be number 13.
That was
Mike was off the back
it was
foot.
Off
right?
the back foot, it was like a flick of the wrist.
So
it was right in the guy's hand.
And then in overtime, when it looks like Chase Daniel might take the Bears down the field to win the game, have you ever seen a team, no matter what the conditions, fumble three times on the on the same offensive series and maintain possession of the ball? The last 20 minutes of that game in real time were unbelievably entertaining.
Yeah, it really was something. Game.
How about the Patriots Vikings?
Yeah, Patriots Vikings was a thumping. I've said this. I say it every year, it seems. Why even bother to analyze the New England Patriots in September or October? Just wait for them to round out, and they'll be right there in December. And as you pointed out, Bob, with their schedule, there's no reason to suspect, especially with Kansas City having to face the challenges that it does. I think actually the biggest challenge in New England right now is the Chargers in terms of home field advantage, because the Chargers are just playing lights out. And but once again, it's highly likely that the Patriots will host every playoff game they play until they go to a Super Bowl, and it's highly likely that they'll end up going to a Super Bowl. And you know, stop me if you've heard this story before. Things are more interesting over on the NFC side, where we're headed for an inevitable showdown, it seems like, with New Orleans and Los Angeles. I'm going to tell you just this. Keep it in the back of your mind. I watched the Rams were here in Detroit yesterday against the Lions. They did not look great. Now, this is my first chance to look at them in person. And while they still won, because everybody can beat the Lions, they didn't. They're beatable. Goff was way off. Gurley was stopped by a Detroit Lions defense that is good against the run, but it's not, you know, the ultimate shutdown. And I was unimpressed, even though they're 11-1. I think that they're touchable. So just file that away in the back of your mind as we finish up this NFL season.
And you know what? At this time of year, things happen. When they start, they happen faster in real time. okay, at this time of year. And we're going to get a better sense over the next week. But I keep saying we cannot go to sleep on the Dallas Cowboys. They can play defense. They can pass. They can run the ball. The defense gets better every time. They have now beat. I know the game was at home. I just, as great as the Rams and Saints have been in this regular season, man, late speed does count for something in sports sometimes. They might go into the playoffs on a major roll.
All right. Michael, talk to us about shaving, would you?
Well, I think, and Mitch, by the way, think about getting a razor. You know, think about shaving once in a while. You shave like an 8 year old boy. You grow hair about as rapidly as an 8 year old boy. Okay. Think about our friends at Gillette, Mitch. They've reached out to you. Okay. They just haven't reached out with their brand to our brand. Okay. They are state of the art when it comes to shaving and shaving cream. You guys have heard me. I'm trying to pass this on to Mitch Albom the way my father passed, right, Bob? The way my father passed it on to me, the tradition.
Your son.
The way my father passed it on to me, and I passed it on to Christopher and Alex and Zach Lupica. We are so honored to have their brand attached to ours. It doesn't matter if it's a Mach 3 or the Fusion. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want from a razor and for shaving cream, you get it, okay? You get it from Gillette. And now the great thing is, you know what's happened. They've got Gillette on demand. So, Mitch, you guys know me for a long time. You know how challenged I can be by simple mechanical tasks. Mm-hmm. Okay, that sometimes, like, just going to the pharmacy and having to get the guy to come to unlock the thing with the razor blades, it can be extremely challenging for me. But now all you have to do is go to Gillette.com. With Gillette On Demand, you can get blades delivered directly to your door. Subscribe to Gillette On Demand today and get 50% off your first order with special offer code SPORTSREPORTERS50 at checkout. That's easy. SPORTSREPORTERS50. You know what that is, Mitch? It's as easy as radio.com at the end of our podcast every time.
Which I will try very hard to get. All right, time for our parting shots, and Bob Ryan leads off.
Well, guys, you know, we live in a world of misleading stats, starting with third down conversion rates, as if third and 18 is the same as third and one. But another big one is quarterback completions because, well, someone has to throw it, and, yes, someone has to catch it. Mm-hmm. Can't have one without the other. Agreed?
No. Yes.
What I'm getting at is that many a QB should be buying dinner and drinks for many a receiver who makes him look better than he is. I firmly believe we are in the golden age of wide receivers. Incredible athletes who make routinely ridiculous catches on a constant basis. Yeah, there are drops, but there are far more, you gotta be kidding me, grabs, be they spectacular leaping catches or astonishing diving catches. And then there's the matter of keeping 2 feet in bounds. Now, as an aside, I much favor the college 1 foot in requirement, but the rule says two, and these guys live with it. I think we take these phenomenal pass catchers for granted. We should not.
Joe Mixon carried the ball 12 times for the Bengals on Sunday against the Broncos and gained 82 yards and continued to be an up-and-coming star at the running back position for his team. When he was in college at Oklahoma, of course, he punched a woman named Amelia Molitor in a restaurant, broke bones in her face. He eventually got a 1-year deferred sentence, 100 hours of community service, and mandated counseling. He eventually reached a settlement with the young woman and apologized, and then on to professional football. He was allowed to continue his career. Ray Rice did not, as we discussed today, after the security video of him punching his now wife, Janae, was shown to the world after an incident in Atlantic City. And now comes the hideous footage of Kareem Hunt striking a woman and kicking her in a Cleveland hotel. The story is there for everybody to see, and Hunt, at least for now, is out of a job. And my question is this: does he eventually get the same kind of death sentence in professional football that Ray Rice did? Or does he end up eating up the yards for some team other than the Chiefs the way Joe Mixon did on Sunday?
In the fourth quarter of yesterday's Patriots-Vikings game, Adam Thielen got in a heated verbal exchange with Bill Belichick. That's right, you heard me. Adam Thielen, the young Vikings wide receiver, Bill Belichick, master of the NFL universe. Now, the source of the confrontation was interesting. Thielen felt that Patriots Patrick Chung might be faking an injury to buy time for Belichick and the Pats to consider a challenge of a particular play. So Thielen turned to the Patriots coach and yelled at him, "That's bullcrap." And on video, it seems that Belichick responds, "Shut the F up." Now, whether Thielen was right or wrong is one thing, but we need to congratulate him, one, for his ballsiness in yelling at the NFL's Wizard of Oz, and two, for eliciting as long a verbal response as Belichick ever gives a reporter. I mean, shut the F up is almost a soliloquy for Belichick. The fact that he gave it to a kid in his early 20s means major props for Thielen in the press room and in locker rooms all across America. No, it's not often that getting cursed at is a badge of honor. But when it comes to Belichick, words are rare and emotions even rarer. So congratulations, Adam. I can almost see the T-shirt now. Bill Belichick told me to shut the F up. You can sell a ton of them. That's going to wrap things up for today's Sports Reporters Podcast. We appreciate your joining us here every Monday and Friday. You can tell your friends that they can get this podcast anywhere they get popular podcasts, including, of course, radio.com. If you like what you heard, see, I got it right. You can leave us a comment. If you didn't, you can leave us a comment. We enjoy hearing from you either way. We will be back on Friday with another edition of this podcast. And until then, on behalf of my colleagues Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.